we're picking up where?
Let's see. We are picking up...
After Short Tempers, is it?
Right, no, at the challenge.
Oh, okay.
Good. You didn't hear the last one?
Ramirez.
I did not hear the last one. I'm sorry.
Oh. You missed Sorcery and Sudden Vengeance, my friend.
I heard part of it.
I can't believe that. That's so sad.
I know, I'm sorry. But, yes.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so we're continuing here with part 7. I'm excited. Oh, okay, I am ready. Is everyone ready to discuss Narnia?
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah. We have to get this over with.
Stretches, wake up. Ooh.
Oh, okay. Well, the challenge is the next scene we're talking about. And this is basically just starts off with Glazel and Miraz talking about where they see Prince Edmund, King Edmund.
King Edmund, actually.
King Edmund.
I love that line. Great line. But they see them coming with the holly leaves? What was it?
Olive branches? I don't know.
I think the book just says green branches.
Green branches? Okay. But they did have that.
But if you want to get specific.
Right,
but,
which was cool. Nice little
anyway,
detail.
But you could... Yes, but anyway, Prince Caspian gives a challenge, and then you've got the great dialogue. But this was actually one of my... I mean, it's not my favorite scene in the movie by any chance, but I think this is one of the scenes I can't really think of how they could do it better. I'll say that.
Yeah, I was always I wasn't ever sure how they were going to do this scene, and that, you know, in the book, this is where Sepestrian and Glazel are introduced. And then Edmund's not, like, where they kind of trick Miraz into it. Edmund's not part of that scene at all. And I was wondering, well, you know, how are they going to do that? And I thought this was the perfect approach to it. I think it's still funny for all the reasons it's funny in the book, but it also gets Edmund more involved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I was surprised. You know, a little surprised to see how Edmund was so casual or something. I guess I would have expected a bit more formality from him, but it, you know, it works. But I didn't expect that, you know, for him to be so casual and talking and actually be such a part of making Miraz accept, you know. It was him as much as anyone else, almost.
Well, I think that they were trying to stop. They didn't want people to think of them as, you know, a boy and a king. They wanted them to, on some level, seem like they were on equal terms, that it was King Edmund and King Miraz.
Yeah.
And I think over the course of the scene, I think that Miraz slowly develops a little more of a respect for Edmund, which I think is consistent with the book.
Yeah.
And how about you, Jens? How do you think this scene came across?
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, like the others have said, it was a really good way of doing that particular bit from the book. And I was glad to see Edmund get a bit of time to himself.
I think this is Edmund's strongest scene, personally, in the whole film.
Yeah, I agree.
Certainly one of the most bits of dialogue that he has.
Yeah, exactly. This is his moment.
I don't know, you might actually... I could probably make a case that Edmund says more words in this scene than in all the other scenes put together.
I would agree with that.
Because the letter he reads. And speaking of which, I was so glad that they kept the letter almost exactly like the book.
They obviously shortened it a lot, but it's the gist of it is very much like the book.
Yeah, but I still loved the, you know, the formality of it all. And
Peter
when I was,
has like 8 different titles, you know, that go on forever.
Yeah. Well, when I was... When we read the book when I was a little kid, you know, that part always stuck out to me because I thought it said to me, oh, you know, this is, you know, Peter does know how to, you know, it's like a different side of Peter where even in Prince Caspian, you see him as a young person. You don't really ever see Peter in the books as a real grown-up king until the last battle, and this is that little glimpse of it. Oh yes, he actually, you know, does know the customs and formalities that an adult king would know, and so I'm glad they kept that there.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought it was interesting how they bring in all the other lords. It's almost like Glazel and Sepespian maneuver the conversation so that the other lords are getting involved too.
Yeah, do you think that Sepespian, is he doing what he does in the book here? Is he trying to trick Miraz into accepting it? Because I wasn't exactly sure. I mean, it did seem like he was just trying to say, well, obviously you should refuse it. Maybe he was just expressing his honest opinion.
Well,
I mean, like, if you hadn't read the book, would you get the idea that he's trying to trick Miraz into accepting it?
I think that, well, I think the way they played it for the movie is, with, you know, especially the little bit of the dialogue you have between Glazel and Miraz, and Glazel and Sepespian early on, you know, those are dangerous words, Lord Glazel, mm-hmm. Lord Sepespian. I think they're playing a little more ambiguous, so you're not quite sure where they stand, and you're not sure who's more loyal to Miraz, but then at the very end, it all, I think it comes clear that, ah, this is, you know, what they were planning, especially Sepespian, you definitely know where he stands at the end.
Yeah.
So I think it's something, I don't think they wanted to have that little conversation where letting the audience know, oh, okay, they're plotting against Miraz. I think they wanted it to be more of a surprise for the film.
Yeah,
and with Glazel, it's obvious, of course, that he's trying to, because His Majesty would never refuse. I think it's kind of obvious that he's...
Yeah, with Sepespian, I think they play it more.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Jinx, you were going to say something?
No, I was just agreeing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one thing I missed is, you know how in the book there was a lot of them, you know, like, oh, he's a young... I know they have the line with Edmund, you know, you're bravely refusing to fight a swordsman half your age. And then, you know, Miraz kind of does like a double take.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, that was a lot more of a point because, sorry, I'm getting my words all mixed up, but the other lords are talking to him and they're saying, you know, he's a young warrior and you're older, and he's like, are you calling me an old man? Half, you know, it that was more the point rather than sorry. Anyway, I got all mixed up. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't really like how it was pretty funny, and it was part of the point of the scene where Miraz is trying to make Miraz feel like a coward for not accepting. But I felt like it's an almost total non-issue in the book as far as, oh, he's just the boy. I mean, he's younger, he's in the prime of his youth, but it was never, oh, he's just some boy. I just think, you know, when Edmund approaches, they just see something in his face. He said they don't think boy, they think king. And I think that's kind of consistent throughout all the Narnia books, that they don't think of them as children at all.
Well,
and I didn't like that line for that reason.
Well, I don't know about Miraz seemed to, you know, I think he kind of put all the kings, you know, Edmund, Caspian, and Peter, all in the same grouping in his mind. I don't think he really took Edmund or Peter seriously.
You're right. It's just that one line where Peter says, oh, you're scared to fight a swordsman half your age, you know, where I felt like that was – it was funny, but it was just that one line where I felt that, you know, that kind of thing would not have been said in the book.
Well, I'm not sure. I think that Miraz was sort of thinking along those lines.
Ultimately, yeah. Like, by the time you get to the single combat, he's like, well, how does he look to you? And they go, young. You know, and you can tell that he obviously thinks that Peter is a real threat. He thinks of him as the king of Narnia.
He's also trying to get Miraz to try to butter him up almost, you know?
Yeah. Great scene.
Does everyone have headphones on, by the way?
Yes.
I do.
Because I'm hearing someone echo back.
Yeah, I heard a little echo there.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, that great example of a scene that is it's different from the book, and yet it still feels very much in the spirit of what the scene is about. What the scene is about in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which
it
is,
works.
Which is great, great adaptation. You know, you take something in the book that's funny and say, well, how can we make this just as funny in a movie?
Now let's go from a scene that's really great scene taken from the book to go to a scene that might have.
It's just. Oh. I mean, oh my goodness.
Okay, let's let... Jens, how about you give the recap on this one?
Do I have to?
You're stuck with this
I guess
DVD.
Let's let Doug.
I'm just looking forward to the DVD so I can skip through this bit.
Maybe Glumfuddle can do it since he'll enjoy the rant and he'll enjoy reciting the lines with fuming.
Well, Susan and Lucy are getting ready to leave on Destrier. And
misspelled his name, by the way.
Pardon
Did
me?
You? Oh, never mind. I think you spelled it right.
In the fan script, yeah.
It's the fan script. Oh, it is spelled incorrectly.
Okay.
Oh, well.
And you know, so Caspian looks up, and I think it shifted into slow motion. I can't remember correctly. And the music swells. He goes, good luck,
the
my
focus
love.
Goes fuzzy.
And Susan grabbed his hand and said, thanks. And Caspian pulled the horn out and says, I think Hassan would have wanted you to have this. Or something like that. And then Caspian gets down on one knee and holds it up to her. And Susan says, will you? And Susan says, leave, yes. And she rides away. I think it was something like that.
I will say this.
Here's
for this
my
scene.
Cell phone number.
Okay, well, here's what I love. One thing I did love about this scene is when, of course, Susan says, like, why don't you hold on to it? You might need to call me again. And every Narnia fan is going, oh, come. They're just rolling their eyes at that line.
Like,
and then
hello?
Lucy gives the exact line that every Narnia fan is thinking.
Oh, Lucy.
Yes, and it was sort of a,
like,
yes.
Wait,
Lucy, you call me again?
You know, what? How could you say that, Susan? You know what every Narnia fan wishes they could project into the film.
That happened in the book. I mean, that's
I love
all I
how
got from
Susan and Caspian are, like, completely oblivious to the fact that Lucy is sitting right, you know, she's sitting right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that they do kind of acknowledge, I think they do kind of know it, and frankly, I think if Lucy wasn't there, they'd like be, you know, they would have taken it a few steps further. But you know, I think they kind of have this idea in their head that I think they're trying to be subtle about it, like communicate a lot without saying it.
Sorry, you can't. There's nothing subtle about this.
I agree. You might need to call me again.
This is almost one of those moments since, you know, Glumfuddle, you are on this set. Oh, were you in Prague?
I actually don't know. I saw one big ass land house set that I think they used for multiple locations, but
because
I don't know.
I almost it's like I'm watching the film, and this would be the perfect cameo for, you know, Glumfuddle jumping out in front of Disney, going, "You might need to call me again."
Somebody with a stick or something.
This is madness.
I do think they've given Lucy the final line in that scene, though. Just having Susan finish it with, oh, shut up. I think Lucy should have got another line in there to tell Susan how pathetic she was saying.
No, Susan.
You shut up!
Shut up! Yes, Lewis said it, not me!
Is that the third shut up line?
When we make the Narnia version of this movie, we can add another line in there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we don't even have that scene, do we?
That's right.
Is this the third shut up line we've had?
I more or less.
Let me see. Hang on.
Oh yes, the Reepy Cheep shut up, and then there was the cat, the Peter and Susan shut up, and then I guess this is the third one. Oh,
yeah, it
shut
is.
Up.
Can't think of any more. I think that's right.
No.
At the beginning on the platform, I think. Isn't there a shut up there with Peter? Or maybe there's not. I can't remember.
No, there isn't.
He bumped me.
Never mind. There's no shut up there. I thought there was someone somewhere else, but
you thought wrong, Glumfuddle. No.
Okay, I thought wrong. I'm gonna do a word search of the transcript right now.
Let's already did. This is three.
Okay, there's the one at the gorge. Then there's Reepy Cheep. Okay, there's only three. Never mind.
Okay.
We should move on now.
Okay, I'm not sure. I mean, okay, let's see. For the single combat,
the Peter and Edmund scene. That's the thing you saw filmed, right?
Me, Peter. Oh yeah, yeah.
When they're walking down the hall, I saw that, and I was like, oh yeah, I know what that is.
In the transcript, I put it in really small print, but it says, "Look right under." Do you all have?
Yeah,
the
I see that.
Yeah.
Off camera to the left. Glumfuddle watches in awe.
I had to put that in there. But Yep. Whenever it shows, whenever the camera is pointed at Peter and Edmund, I was watching that. Like specifically when Peter, when he pulls out his sword and steps forward, and the camera kind of pans up dramatically. I definitely saw that shot right there. They did like 10 different takes of it.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Great.
I'm not sure what the deal is. There was a problem with the sunlight continuity. They were trying to get the sun just right or something like that, so it took a lot of takes.
Okay.
You should have, like, ran around to the back of the set and, like, waved, like, "I'm here! I'm here! I'm in
Yeah.
the film!"
And actually, that was a thing where they took a bunch of the writers and said, "Okay, we're gonna let you look at at the monitor when they're filming." And there wasn't a lot of room over there, so they took about half of them, and that was the last take. And I wasn't part of the first half, so
No.
I missed the opportunity to see the monitor. And because so, I was looking at the camera, going, "What the heck are they doing? Why are they pointing it up at it? That looks really awkward." And it wasn't until I saw the film that it finally made sense what they were trying to do.
Oh, okay.
But ironically, when I see the shot of Peter pulling out his sword, the background looks like green screen to me. It looks kind of fakey to me, even though obviously I know it was real. I was there, but to me, it looks kind of, ironically, it looks a little bit fakey. I don't know why.
Well, I don't know. It didn't look fake to me, but maybe that's because I thought they wouldn't fake a blue sky.
Right.
So, well, I liked how they did the entrance. Although it's kind of funny that this the line, "How many, is it how many more must die for the throne? Just one." And now at fencing, that's something that's often quoted before two people begin, just to.
Right. I liked how Peter and Edmund, walking out onto the battlefield and having the Narnian army cheer them on. That really captures what I love about the scene in the book, is that it's not your typical, crazy battle. It's this very organized, it's like a sports team, basically.
Yeah.
Everyone's like cheering on their team, and it just and reacting to what's going on, and it makes it,
I thought it was
unique
pulled
and
off.
intense at the same time. So it really captures what I
Yeah.
love about the book.
Yeah, I really loved how the duel was overall, really how it was pulled off. And the only thing that one thing that just made me mad is right when Peter jumps and they make contact, then it cuts away. I'm going, I wanted to see Peter and Miraz fight. I don't
I
want to
was yeah I
see.
was I agree. I was so into that, and then it cuts away to what I believe is the worst scene in the movie, which is when Susan kills all those guys. It's terrible for so many reasons. Like, number one, Susan fighting like that, like all superhero, is wrong to begin with.
It's kind of all dramatic, like Last Stand. Like, she's sacrificing herself so Lucy can get away, and she knows she's gonna probably get shot down, and she would have been if it hadn't been for Caspian. So it's like all
Right.
this dramatic, sleepy music, and we all know, oh, of course, well, we know she's not gonna die, so
And
kind of
Caspian
sucks.
coming out of nowhere was really cheesy, and but above all, it totally distracts from the single combat, totally needlessly. Like, what was the point of Susan just going in a circle, basically? She leaves with Lucy for about 5 minutes, then she just turns around and comes back with Caspian. The scene is completely unnecessary and a huge distraction from where our attention should be, which is a single combat. And on top of that, it's
It was
completely against the book, so I think this is easily the worst scene in the movie.
made to further the romance. Know
That's
that.
all I could come up with. Or maybe they wanted, because in the book, during the scene, Susan and Lucy are together, maybe they wanted to try to get them together for a while.
It just
But
doesn't work.
I don't
The
think it
whole
works.
Lucy going off into the woods to find Aslan, I never understood how it worked, really.
Yeah, they never really explained it. Like, oh, she's going off into the woods, and I guess you can assume that she's just hoping Aslan will appear. But I have a feeling even the writers themselves weren't quite sure, and so they just kind of left it vague. But,
Andrew Adamson, you
yeah,
can
that
email
totally
me.
makes sense.
Andrew Adamson, email me, brilliant@narniweb.com. Let me know if
That's
you were
right.
sure what you were doing.
Maybe there's a deleted scene somewhere. But that's certainly the implication, that she was, gonna find Aslan or hope Aslan would turn up.
Gents, any thoughts?
Well, I'm wondering if they're heading off to the place where she saw Aslan in the dream. She might have told the others about the dream that she had of meeting Aslan, and that's where they're heading. That's where they're taking
Yeah,
her.
that was my thought as well, that she was heading back to one of the places where she either saw Aslan in the dream or where she really did see Aslan, which was by the river.
Yeah, something does say, you're sending a little girl into the deepest, darkest parts of the forest or whatever, so that's possible.
That's the only sense I could make out of it. But still, I shouldn't have had to make sense out of it myself.
Right.
Part of my fear was, I thought, for one thing, it kind of pulled me out of the movie, and I thought, oh, great, they're going to do a cutting back and forth between Susan and Lucy and then Peter and Miraz. Once I found out that they didn't, because that can actually work very well, I think, for like films like The Two Towers, where they had the big battle at Helm's Deep, and then they were cutting between Frodo and Sam, and cutting between Merry and Pippin.
Just right here, man, I wanted to be at the single combat.
Yeah,
so emotionally into that.
In that case, it worked well, but in this case, there's only one. It's not like they're going back and forth. There's just one big chunk cut out of the battle.
Right.
And
in the Two Towers,
in the Two Towers,
you know, they cut to the Ents during Helm's Deep because of battle fatigue. You know, the battle goes on too long. You know, it starts to kind of drag, where I didn't feel that was necessary here. And also, they're cutting to another action scene with Susan.
Can you imagine how...
It's just scenery, really.
It would be like once Aragorn gives the line, "How are you feeling?" and then cut. What? You don't even get to see the Uruk-hai die? Oh well. Can we move on?
All right. So the single combat. I know, really, and you liked the choreography in the single combat. Is that right?
Overall, yeah. I thought Alan Poppleton, the sword choreography, he's not great, and I think that. I can understand him going for more than just sword and shield and going toward fists and kicks later. And so I can understand that, but it's not as good as I would have liked. But for his skill, it probably came out as good as it could. And overall, I enjoyed it, yeah.
I really liked the duel. I really liked the way they did it. And, I mean, I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm, you know, got my heart and my, you know, I'm concerned for Peter, and I know how it ends. So it was really suspenseful and pretty dramatic, and I think it worked really well. And I can only imagine how people who don't know the story are watching it.
I can only imagine, though. I mean, thinking, boy, wearing that steel armor and then trying to do a half flip and landing on your back, that's got to be painful. I'm sure it had to be rubber armor when he was doing that shot or something.
Did anyone time how long it took for Peter's face to get fully revealed, like for his helmet to not get up and his coif to move back?
Didn't take very long.
No, that's what I was thinking. That's when AJ Aitken and I went down to see the premiere, that was one of the points where we just looked at each other with raised eyebrows, like, uh-huh. When, oh, look, we can see his wonderful hair and all of his face.
Actually, I've worn helms like Peter's, and you can't see anything. I mean, if someone's up close, you can't see what they're doing out of the. I would sooner have the visor up. So I was kind of well, he's probably at a better advantage now. But,
yeah, I can't imagine Miraz could see much.
I don't know. I've never worn
a
mask like
that.
But I did. Yeah, I liked it. I did like how it was very, it was brutal like the book, because in the book, you know, Peter, he's not sure if his arm is broken, and you know, he does get pretty banged up, which I did like that they had here. Although I must say that for the battle, Peter heals miraculously well.
Yeah.
But, now Glumpuddle, you had an issue, I remember, with the duel and how long it took Miraz to die.
I think Glumpuddle got kicked off.
Yeah, he's gone. He's not on my list anymore.
Yeah, I was talking, and then I heard the thing go off. That's why I stopped.
Oh, well,
and
he's
telling
gone.
Me that he got kicked off.
Oh, I'll invite him back here.
Hello.
Hello, Glenfiddle. Are you there?
Now I am here.
Hey.
We finished all of the discussion. There is nothing more to talk about.
Oh, good. Okay.
It went a lot more quickly after you dropped off.
You just kind of said, oh, we better hurry up and get through the kiss before Glumpuddle gets back.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you ruined it for people who are watching the film in progression as we do the podcast.
I would like
okay.
to see anyone do that. Yeah.
Where were we?
Well, I actually was just posing a question to you because you'd mentioned to me how you didn't like how long it took Miraz to die.
Right.
Well, where are you? to where he died? We skipped
that? I guess I felt like because it went on so long, it's like, you know, first you think Miraz is down, then respite. And then he'll, oh, he goes for Peter. Oh, now Miraz is down. Oh, wait a second. Let's give it to Caspian. Oh, wait a second. I'm not really going to kill him. And they have this big emotional thing. It made it feel like it was going to be the big emotional climax of the film. It was going to be that this was going to be it. But actually, there's a whole, like, 20-minute battle after this. And so I like the fact that in the unexpectedly kind of gets killed off kind of quickly. And that there's kind of, there's shock value in that, I think. And they didn't really capture that in the movie. I think they felt like they had to build it up, because he was the villain.
Yeah, he is
the villain.
But ultimately,
killing Miraz is not the end. You know, there's still more that has to be done.
He is the villain. He is the symbol of all that, of the evil, the badness in this movie. And to just kill him off so quickly, I think, I don't know if it would have worked cinematically. It worked in the book, but I don't know if it would have worked here.
No, the problem is he's already had this big emotional, you know, blah, 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 we're going to kill him. And then after that, we have this 20-minute battle, and after that, gosh, I'm done. I'm not ready for it to go through another 20 minutes of fighting.
I don't know. I didn't at all get the – I mean, I wouldn't have wanted to go on any longer. I kind of see what you're saying, but I didn't get the feel – oh, man, when is this going to end? When is he going to die?
I'm not opposed to the idea of, you know, Peter saying, oh, Caspian, you do it. Because, you know, Peter does have the chance to kill Miraz in the book, and he chooses not to.
And then, of course, Edmund says, this is no time for chivalry, Peter, which kind of mimics his thoughts in the book.
Right. And I like how it seemed consistent with the book. And by not killing Miraz shows, he kind of gives everyone an example of what kind of king he's going to be, that the old ways of, you know, the cruelty that Miraz, that were under Miraz, that those days are gone, and now the days of chivalry and honor from the old days have returned, which is a major theme in Caspian. So I was actually okay with that. So it just seemed to drag a little bit.
I will say, I want to talk briefly, just kind of backtrack a little bit to the beginning of the duel. It was in the middle of the duel where let me look. What does Peter say to Edmund?
Oh, right. During the break?
Yeah. I'm trying to find
it. Is that the line from last battle?
I wonder what happens to that comb if we die here.
Yeah.
Well, not that part, but just the part where he tells Edmund,
you've always been there for me or something like that.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, that kind of defines Edmund's role in this movie, because he's not a huge presence in this movie, and it's sort of, it's like he doesn't get the appreciation that he really deserves. And Peter's kind of, it's almost like he's acknowledging, you know, you've been here throughout this whole adventure here, and you're not really, and I haven't really acknowledged you much at all.
Yeah, you know, I agree. It's almost a good thing that Edmund doesn't have a huge role, because right here, Peter gets to say, you know what, you really, you know, you've been there for me, and it kind of, Edmund finally gets something after kind of being in the background for a while.
And of course, he's okay with it.
Yeah.
He just says save it.
And I mean, Edmund freaking killed the White Witch. I mean.
Right. He had that, but he still doesn't feel like a major player in the story, or he doesn't get acknowledged for that.
And the werewolf.
Oh, I have to say, because I wasn't here for the last one you guys were talking about the White Witch scene. After Edmund, you know, he breaks the ice, and he's standing there, and then he says, I know, and there's this pause, and I'm thinking, oh, man, he's going to say something profound, like, I know how the White Witch can deceive, and, you know, something like that. And then he says this line from the beginning, and I'm just like, what? That was not what I was expecting.
Oh, I think that Edmund... He points out, he was just trying to point out Peter's flaw, which is that, you know, Peter is so prideful. But, you know, I think Edmund is, he's trying to support Peter at the same time. And so I think that was kind of his way of saying, you know, you got to get your act together here. Like, I know you had it sorted, you know, and kind of like, you know what, maybe you, a way of saying, you know what, maybe you wouldn't have had it sorted. Maybe you really need to accept help and not be so such a jerk, basically. But I think that was still Edmund looking out for Peter in a sense, like to say, hey, Peter, you know, you got to get your act together.
Yeah, I didn't think he would say something like that, but I didn't think he would say that. You know, it was like, you know, dramatic build up, and then I know you had it sorted. Okay, that wasn't what I was expecting.
Oh, I think
I felt you kind of got cut off back there. Were you going to say something?
What? No. Oh, well, if I was, I'd forgotten.
Okay. Well, feel free to jump in anytime, because
we need more action.
Jim Fan and Glumpuddle like to play off each other.
Yeah. Okay, we were at the single combat, which I think you said you kind of liked how it goes beyond just a sword battle, but anytime it wasn't just swords, I was like, oh, pick up your swords, and I just liked that a lot better.
I didn't like that it finished with Peter not holding a sword. I didn't like that part at all.
Yeah, I didn't like how when they were wrestling around with their shields, I thought that was in slow motion, I thought that was a bit cheesy.
I never liked slow motion, period.
Raise yourself.
That must have been a fun line to ADR.
Oh, come on. Yeah, that was I don't usually mind slow motion too much, but that was a part where it just went, they could have done it in full speed and it would have been great, but I thought, oh please.
I like slow motion when Peter jumps at Mira's at the beginning. There I like it.
Yeah, that works.
And then maybe even when Peter's rolling on the ground a little bit. But after that, I just wanted to see an intense duel. I didn't think the slow motion was necessary. And it took away from the intensity, I thought, to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we can talk about the scene without mentioning that one shot. It's just after it cuts away from Susan and Caspian. And it kind of comes up behind Miraz, you know? It's kind of circling around them.
Oh, yeah. It's just back and forth.
Shot. Like, after that, I thought, okay, this is going to be cool. And then after that, it wasn't that cool. But...
Well, that was the part where I thought, oh, okay, good. They're still fighting. Because I had this fear that, great, we're missing something while we're watching. You know, it's not like it's going, it's not like in the book where it's now, 1 hour earlier. It's, no, they are fighting right now and we're missing it.
Yeah.
Fighting with helmets on, by the way.
One thing,
and we're missing it.
I was a bit disappointed that, you know, the thing I love about the scene in the book is I always thought it'd be really intense in a movie to hear the crowds reacting. Like, you know, Mirai's hits Peter, and the Telmarines cheer, and then Peter hits Mirai's, and the Narnians cheer. You know, I thought that would be... And the crowd noise is kind of... They kind of backed off on it. Like, you're kind of... I felt like it should have been louder.
Well,
to make
I
it more
never see the Telmarine army being the kind of army that would... be cheering. I mean, they're so far away, for one.
Popcorn, peanuts, soda drinks, hot dogs, popcorn.
Exactly. But I don't know. I think they could have brought submarines, because they wanted to have the big dramatic charge, but I don't know. I think they should have done more with that.
Well, I mean, they're so far away. They can't see. Plus, they don't look like the kind of army that would be cheering. You know, they would kind of
just
raise
their spear or something. I don't know.
For me, reading the book, it was a bit of a question for me. I just trying to work out in my imagination. Okay, how close are the armies? Because they can see some things, like Peter getting knocked down and things, and they can, but they can't see Glazel or Sepespian kill Miraz, and they can't see. And apparently, I'm wondering. Okay, how? Really, just the armies, you know, are the Narnians bumping up against the Telmarines while watching the fight? And sort of, oh, excuse me, well, just watching the fight, and then maybe later we'll have a war, you know? So,
yeah.
I think in the film it kind of works that they couldn't.
In the illustration,
the Narnians are fairly close to the combat, and the Telmarines, because they want to have that big dramatic charge where they fall into the pit, are kind of backed off.
Mm-hmm. Gents, you were going to say?
I was just looking at the illustration in the book, and they're right around the ring.
Yeah, that's Paul and Beans, I think, did it right next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, shout out to the Bulgy Bear. We get
to
the game.
Like, kind of, there's that reaction there. That was awesome.
Gotta love the Bulgy Bear.
That is much
as
cool as
paws.
Where's Reepy Cheep during this bit? Is he just back at the Howl?
I imagine so. You only see him like in a couple shots in the battle. in his armor. So
yeah.
I don't know.
I didn't like his armor all that much. I thought it made him look kind of tacky.
I agree. See, I actually, and I liked, I didn't have a problem with Mr. Beaver's armor. I kind of like Mr. Beaver's armor, even though I know a lot of people didn't. But I didn't like Reepicheep's armor. I guess he just doesn't seem like the type who would need, who would want armor.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of funny that, I think it's actually kind of amusing that, you know, as small as he is, as small a target as he is, he has some armor.
Right.
Yeah. I think it kind of, it's funny.
In case anyone steps on him.
Oh, we have to talk about the scene where you know, Edmund says like keep smiling, and then
oh,
like,
yeah.
So
yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny.
I got a laugh, but it wasn't an inappropriate laugh. It was sort of a yeah, he's got to keep smiling.
Keep up appearances, you know. I thought that was pretty funny.
Public relations is a big
deal. I have
deal.
To say, after the battle, I felt so sorry for Peter because I mean he fights this whole duel. And you see him, he is totally, completely exhausted. And, you know, you can tell he's in a lot of pain. And then, you know, 5 minutes later, oh, gotta go run around half of Narnia because
right,
my
right.
opponent is a lion sneak. And he's a better lion sneaks, too. It's like, oh, poor guy.
Yeah, that's pretty magical by the river scene. He doesn't look all that tired.
Yeah. Well, have we exhausted the duel?
I guess so.
We got to finish up with the talk of when Miraz dies.
Yeah, I mean.
I thought it was a bit of poetic justice that he gets stabbed with Susan's arrow, although
I love that.
I thought it was odd that Sebastian would
clever.
Save it.
Yeah,
why
that
Sebastian
is.
Save it.
Yeah, I think I almost wonder if later, like, I wonder if they shot that scene and said, "Oh, we should probably explain like where that arrow came from." Then they like shot the scene in Cornelius' study where you see the arrow. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but. It is. I mean, he obviously must have been planning it the entire time. I think, like from the very beginning, that if Miraz wasn't killed, that he was going to frame the Narnians for it. He must have been planning that from the very beginning.
Yeah, I guess. Although they don't bring the body back, so.
Right.
I mean, it's sort of a. I guess it just seems. I mean, on one level it works, but once you think about it, it's sort of a. What did he do when he got the arrow? He goes.
I will say
Miraz
that
with this.
My dad who. He's read the book before, and he kind of knows it, but he said, who killed Miraz? Like, he thought for a second, did the Narnians actually shoot Miraz? Because it's PG, and they don't actually show the arrow go in. And then next thing you know, like, they shot him. Like, I think if you weren't paying close attention, you could mistakenly believe that they actually shot him.
I think it was quite obvious, you know, who put the arrow in him, and it wasn't Susan. Because, I mean, they have a close-up of it, for goodness sake.
I did think, I will say this, I thought it was a bit odd how it looks like, you know, Miraz gets a really nasty stabbing from Peter, and he doesn't die.
Right.
And they really make it look like he's dead. And then, of course, he kind of gets up and, you know, supposed to be in, you know.
Which always gets a cheer, by the way, in theaters. Like,
yes. Well, actually, in the theater I was in, one of the girls behind me went, just...
But yeah, I agree. Like, how exactly does Miraz get stabbed? Is it just like kind of lightly? Because then the arrow, of course, kills him.
I think he goes right up through a chink, and his armor just shoves it right up there.
Look like yeah, kinda... like right below his breastplate.
It was right in that area where there's no blood. Sure. That's where all the wounds in this film occur.
Yeah.
Well, mix that with the fact that he's probably bleeding to death anyway.
Right. Yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm.
No, wait. You do see blood when he, Peter cuts him on the leg. You see some blood.
Oh, you're right. Yep. You're right.
So there is a little bit of blood.
Mm-hmm. And there's some on Glizelle's lip earlier in the movie. So there is blood in this movie.
There is.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But the way that you know Miraz is betrayed is a little different than the book.
I did think it was a bit odd how, of course, the Thespian takes Miraz's sword. I'm thinking, ha, he wanted the sword.
Right. It's kind of a symbol. You know, there's a kind of a running theme in the movie of passing on swords. I think you've got, you know, at the beginning, after Peter and Caspian have their little duel, and you know, Caspian takes his sword away, and then oh, you'll be wanting your sword back, and then they have Peter again passing on his sword to Caspian.
And now you've got here Sepespian taking up Mira as a sword. So even in the first viewing, I saw this theme of sort of. Then, of course, at the very end, of course, Peter willfully gives his sword to Caspian to pass on the kingship. So there is kind of this theme in the movie of, like, you know, passing on the sword, passing on the responsibility. And forcefully taking the responsibility in Sepespian's case.
Yeah. They obviously put a lot more significance in the swords than I think C.S. Lewis did.
Yeah.
You know, like, the sword makes the king. Not the king is the one who, you know, makes his sword what his sword is.
People like swords. What can I say?
I have to say, I really hope they don't pass Rindon down to every single king. I hope Caspian retires it. Because I don't want to see that in every movie.
Yeah, I agree.
And it makes sense that he would have kept his sword and Rillian would have got his own, you know, because
yeah,
he was still alive. He wasn't dead yet.
Yeah, I agree.
And Rillian also wasn't king.
Yeah.
So I just had to say
I need my own sword.
Oh, okay.
Actually,
Glumfield,
did I
show the duel?
Yeah, and I think this is actually good length for one episode. Do we want to keep talking about the battle, and I'll just split this into two episodes?
You think we can rush to the battle in just a few minutes here? I mean, just because there's not that much to discuss. Just
it's not that much.
All right.
Then
that big moment at the beginning where
okay, whoa. I'm going to split this up into two episodes here.
Okay.
Okay. See you all in the next episode. That's all for now. If you want to email me, you can email me at rillian@narniweb.com. And of course, if it's just general feedback, you can always use the narniweb.com website and post comments, or you can go to the iTunes store and post a review there, and you can give us a star rating of 1 to 5, preferably 5. But, of course, that's your jurisdiction. Until next time, I'm your host, Rillian, and we will be discussing the battle, and I hope you'll tune in.